Well, hi there, Jonathan Doyle with you from Being Catholic and Going Deeper. Great to have just a moment of your time for this great live recording of a seminar I recently gave to a large group of teachers on some of the key issues in Catholic education and just what it takes to be a committed and passionate Catholic educator. So I really hope you're going to find something fantastic in here that's really useful to you in your situation. We're going to cover a lot of ground, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this live presentation from me, Jonathan Doyle, at Going Deeper.
Here is the road ahead. Always show people where we're going, what we're going to try and accomplish in the time that we have. First thing, some opening musings on the deep things of Catholic education, the stuff that keeps me awake at night because I think it's still a sleeping giant. It is the number one interface of young people with the church, and it will be for a long time. It's the number one interface where most people in this society will interact anything Catholic. And I don't think we've been doing a great job resourcing and supporting Catholic teachers just about anywhere. So I want to give you some musings on that. Then we're going to talk about more serious things, such as what Top Gun can teach us about being a great Catholic educator. If you haven't seen the film, shame on you. We're going to talk about that. And then I'm going to do why vocation beats a job. For a long time, the unemployment rate was 5%. You could do anything else. If you are here because you get holidays and super and it's stable, it's not a bad reason. But with no disrespect to my Buddhist brothers and sisters, you're not coming back. So why not do something that you actually really enjoy doing? A job is relatively easy to find still. Unemployment is still relatively low. Why most Catholic schools are not really that Catholic, it's the mission statement and liturgy phenomenon. St. Heretics is an evangelistic Christian community with a focus on, that's on the board when you walk in the door, and we have a liturgy. And that's about it. Now, you guys are different. I am familiar with your school. I've visited a few times. You are not the norm. You need to know that too. You're not the norm. Already a lot of fantastic stuff's happening here. And finally, we want to talk about how to avoid burnout and cynicism. And then in the second session, we're going to look at these key pastoral issues for young men. This is my other hat. This is the other thing I do. What's it like to be a young man at the moment? What are they facing? Because you're the experts. I'm leaving for the airport as soon as I'm done. You're showing up again in 2 weeks. The process is simply each input from me leads to a short time of personal writing. Because Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas famously said that the hand is the conjoined instrument of the mind. The hand, great quote. The hand is the conjoined instrument of the mind. We are not writing a lot these days, journaling. So I want to encourage you to use these opportunities that you have. Because when we write, things just tend to get concretized for us. And then finally, some chance to discuss with each other. So friends, for those of you who do have devices with you, if you want to tweet as we go, this is a new phenomenon. People like to do that. That's my Twitter handle. We'll put a hashtag in, Mazinod stuff. Why do I do this? Because I'm passionate about new technologies. No, because people were always using phones while I was talking anyway. So now at least I feel they're actually doing something about what I'm saying. So if you want to tweet, that's where we're going to tweet. Let's begin without using an electronic device. Without using an electronic device. And if you're David Stratton or Margaret Palmer and you can't play, which film won the 1965 Academy Award for Best Picture? Wasn't The Sound of Music, wasn't To Sir With Love, and as a young teacher in North Queensland once said, no, it wasn't Rambo. 1965, based on the brilliant play starring the British actor Sir Paul Schofield, written by the playwright Thomas Beckett, A Man for All Seasons. Friends, if you haven't seen the film, who has not seen the film, A Man for All Seasons? Wow. Okay, note to self, bucket list, do not die, right? Do not die until you've seen the film. It's one of the greatest films in history, based on the life of St. Thomas More. If your history's bad, Henry VIII had what we call prodigious appetites. He wanted a male heir, didn't get one. Couldn't get a divorce, so he does what any thinking regent would do in this situation. He creates a new church. All he wanted was his friend St. Thomas More to give it the imprimatur of sorts, to stamp it and go, yeah, you can do that. Thomas More wouldn't budge. He died and remains for us the great example of integrity and loyalty to the faith under pressure. Long story short, anyway, why is it a great film? The dialogue is extraordinary. There is a scene in the Tower of London where Cromwell is interrogating St. Thomas More. St. Thomas More looks at him and says, you threaten me, sir, like a schoolyard bully. And Cromwell says to Thomas More, how then should I threaten you? And he said, you should threaten me like the Lord High Chancellor of England, with justice. And he says, it is exactly justice you are threatened with. And Thomas More pauses and says, well, then I am not threatened. It's the quality of the dialogue. I'm showing you this scene and asking you to see the film because there is a scene at the start of the movie on the bank of the Thames where St. Thomas More is talking to a young teacher called Richard Rich, who eventually betrays him. They're standing on the bank of the Thames. What does Richard Rich want? More than anything else, what Richard wants is to be a player in Henry VIII's court. He wants to get in on the power games of Henry VIII's court. But he's a teacher, and St. Thomas More says to him, Rich, you're a teacher. Be a great one. And Richard pauses and looks up at him and says, but who would know? And St. Thomas More says, your students, your friends, your parents, God. Not a bad audience, that Rich. Not a bad audience. Opening pitch. If you are going to do this, why not be a great one? If I had a day with you, we'd talk about Aristotle. Perfectibility. You're the only thing in the universe that can become more of what it already is. For my note takers in the room, that is gold. You are the only thing in the universe that can become more of what it already is. A dog cannot become more dog-like. What's it going to do, bark more? Aristotle would just say that's an accident of its nature. It would just become a more annoying dog. You are the only thing in the universe that can become more human. A better teacher. More wisdom. More compassion. More discipline. All these different functions of your personality that you could become better and better and better at. Why not be a great one? Because according to the church documents on the screen, take a moment to look at that one. There's a beautiful poetry in that. What you think is teaching, what you think looks like pastoral care, what you think like stopping somebody from punching somebody, is not writing on inanimate material, it's writing on the spirits of human beings. Now, when Mazenod left France and he was exiled with his family in Venice, the input or the influence of that priest there, Father Bartoli, had an incredible impact on what happened to Mazenod. Just his daily interactions, forming his intellect, forming his will, forming his sense of beauty, just this daily interaction. So exactly what do you think is happening in these interactions with young people? And I reference Top Gun. I just love the scene at the start where Viper is standing there and all the guys arrive at Top Gun. And he has this great line where he says, you guys are good. We'll make you better. Love that line. I met a celebrity recently speaking to Catholic staff. I met Jester's nephew. People who love Top Gun see me in the break. We'll make you better. Why not become an extraordinary one? How do we bridge the gap between where you are now as an educator and where you could? Please think about the question. I have about a 5% success rate. Everyone finds me interesting. If you had to listen to somebody, I mean, I'm not boring. But if about 5% of the room goes, that's an interesting question. How do you bridge the gap between where you are now and the teacher you could be? Two key concepts. Number one, vocation from the Latin vocare, V-O-C-A-R-E, vocare. Different interpretations of it. But you need to understand the word, please, my note takers. Vocare means, of course, to call forth or to draw out. The word vocare means to call forth from, to draw out from. Here's the pitch. The best of you in this room have never had a job. The pitch is that you have been supernaturally invited into something. The capacities that make you do what you do were drawn forth and called out of you. Please think about that. Another way to conceptualize it, what is if you didn't choose teaching? What if teaching chose you? Or the Holy Spirit, through that concept, chose you? Scriptural basis. It was He who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, some to be pastors and teachers. That's one of those things you just got to sit with later this afternoon and go, oh, I thought I did this because I like young people. Yeah, holidays are good. What a concept that this was drawn forth from you. Some great quotes from some of the great founders. This is from De La Salle. Hard, maybe hard to see, but God has given you so many graces. God has chosen you to do His work. God has chosen you to make Him known to others. We are called like the apostles to make God known to others. Young people need good teachers like visible angels. In Perth last week, they really liked that idea as visible angels. How else do you think the presence of Christ will be ministered to young people exactly? Where do you think that's happening? How many of the punters do you think have a vibrant parish life? Some. God has called you to your ministry and entrust to you the care of young people. That would be, if you believe that, that would be an interesting way to get up in the morning. What I do matters. What I do has significance. I've been called into something. Crucially, vocation never just means you get called. It always means what you get called, you get sent. We'll talk about Missio Dei in a minute. Abraham, Moses, Jesus, simple examples. Abraham is sitting in the desert, minding his own business, surrounded by a pagan nation. Conceptualize this with me. He begins to hear something at night. Think of this man, semi-Bedouin, living in tents. He just walking out there at night. And night after night, this is an historical figure. He walks out, begins to hear something. Abram, Abram, Abram. Standing there under a billion stars. Abram, Abram. And in faith and the teaching of the church, I believe that happened. I believe this person out there literally began to hear something. I will make you the father of many nations. But I have no choice. Called out. I'm calling you out, Abraham. You're out of Ur of the Chaldees. You're gone. You're out. You're going somewhere else. You're called out to be sent somewhere. Moses, called out of Egypt, given an identity and then sent back. Jesus, called into the desert, but he didn't stay there. As soon as he leaves the desert, he ends up in Capernaum. Why? Because he suddenly has a mission. I have been sent. Missio Dei. To preach the good news. Ransom for captives, eyes of the blind, vocation friends. Or you don't get to choose this, by the way. This isn't optional. You can change careers, but if you have a vocation, it just does lead to mission. To the Missio Dei, to the sending of God. Come on, if you think about the possibilities of this, really, it does reorient the meaning of your life. You're not accountants. There was one in the audience last week and he took offense. You're not astronauts. You're not mechanics. And you go, well, my life just came this way and I'm just asking you to consider that maybe something was called deeply forth from you. Big pitch. So that's about you. Let's talk about the Catholic school. My sense is simply this. Forget most of what I say today. Here's the big idea. A Catholic school is just going to eventually be a reflection of the faith formation of its individual staff. A Catholic school is eventually going to be a reflection of the faith formation of its staff. How could it be any other way? We could give you vast amounts of money and you could have the best programs in the country and the best facilities and it would work. It would be good. You'd have good programs. You'd have academic rigor. It would all look great and it would hold together and it would be functional. Now, I'm going to give you a lot of other stuff, but basically that's my pitch. And I've been doing this for a decade with thousands upon thousands of teachers. When individual teachers get serious about the life of faith, the school transforms. And I don't see how it could be any other way. Schools where faith values are high become positive places to work. When you get a critical mass of enough of you that have understood the gospel message and begin to live it, you're just good to each other. You just want to turn up. There's a collegiality, there's a spirit, there's a shared understanding. When it doesn't happen, what we encounter, what I've encountered for 10 years plus, is two things: cynicism and then burnout, then cynicism. Here's the next big idea. You can't do a supernatural task without supernatural resources. You can't do a supernatural task without supernatural resources. Basically a form of it, Pelagianism, but forget everything else, but there's the big pitch. If enough of us, and we're going to talk about how we do that. Key points, this is from Harvard Business School. So when you see people come in that go, we're going to now have middle school, we're now going to do this, we're now going to, as if I could seriously make any of you do anything. Do you think I can stand here and go, now they brought me in because you all need to pray more, you all need to get back to church, get right with God, and everything's going to work out. You'd all go, that's nice. What time's your flight? I can't make you do anything. I can be mildly persuasive, and some of you might go, that's interesting ideas. But according to Harvard Business School, again, all you actually do is help people discover their own reasons for change. And I'm going to try and do that for you now about bridging the gap. First point. There was a really cool Latin term which I'd like some of you to remember called Capax Dei. C-A-P-A-X, Capax Dei. Translates as the capacity for God. The church's understanding, and I think your lived experience, will tell you that each of you sitting here from left to right, front to back, is in the Latin. You are Capax Dei. You are the sort of thing that has the capacity for God. Now, you are very free to never actualize that. How good is this quote? Seriously, this is gold. Augustine, 4th century. He who made you without your cooperation will not save you without your cooperation. He who made you without your cooperation will not save. God is the ultimate respecter of persons. He will sit there for 84 years plus, or 84 years for men, 87 years for women statistically, and let you not be Capax Dei. You have that immense freedom. And if you're a parent, you know a little bit of what that freedom looks like with a child. All you can do is love, but the child is ultimately free to accept or reject it. Let me help you with it. Some of you go, well, I'm not into this religious stuff, Jonathan. It's a little bit like saying, I'm not into that oxygen stuff. Now, I know other people like oxygen, but it's really not my thing. For me, the metaphor is a strong one, that our Capax Dei, our capacity for God, is as real as the need for oxygen. It's a clumsy metaphor, but I believe it to be true. How do you do it? Well, it's really easy. How do you do this? How do you become that person? I might not have even convinced you that you want to. But if at some point you did, how would you do it? It's very simple. All you have to do is become a saint. That's all you have to do. Now we got some problems. I'm going to finish up in a sec. We got some problems now. And I tell you, they're really interesting where they come from. A lot of our stuff is getting really big in the US. So this morning I got a bunch of emails from Palm Beach that use all our stuff. And the Americans are so exuberant. Jonathan, this is great. We pray for you, this stuff, and it's awesome, and we love it. And they're just American exceptionalism, right? They're like, this is great, man. They love it. They're very effusive about spiritual things. We're not in this country. Some theories are that it's very much to do with our convict roots. that the first pastors in the colonies, the first religious pastors in the colonies were as brutal, if not more, than a lot of the jailers. So right embedded in our cultural history is a deep rejection and suspicion of anything religious. Just worth flagging that because it's not common all around the world. Importantly, in case you think faith is dying out and the triumph of secularism and postmodernity and reason has triumphed, please understand religion is growing massively around the world. Secular atheism is really the exception. This comes from research at Georgetown University. I've got all the data for you, but please understand the people of faith and a belief in the spiritual are growing exponentially around the world. Become a saint. Interesting quote. It's attributed to Bonhoeffer. It wasn't Bonhoeffer, but there's a famous quote, the only true suffering in life is not to be a saint. So when I say to you, saint, our Australianness goes, what do you think of? It's pious. It's otherworldly. You're levitating. You're disconnected from the reality of real people. Really simple. Firstly, you have to become a saint because there's bucket loads of scriptural basis for it. All through the Old Testament, God constantly has a refrain, be holy because I am holy. Be holy. Be like me. Be like me because I want you to be like me. Here's how you become a saint. Ready? Really simple. All the saints did was this. They just fell in love. That's all they did. All the saints did was fell in love. Watch the metaphor. I'll connect it for you so you'll all get it. Everybody in this room, religious or not, all of you at some point, now think of this now, try and do it without a sly smile. All of you at some point fell in love. Everybody in this room, think back to a time when you met somebody, maybe, you know, it's your spouse or it was a teenage romance. Remember when you met them? And all that stuff began to happen. The one thing that's common for all of you is that you all wanted one thing. Essentially, you all wanted to be with them. When I was chasing Karen, all I wanted was to be with Karen. You know, someone could have said, Jonathan, we want you to come and give an opening address to the United Nations. Is Karen there? No, she won't be there. I'm busy. You wanted to be with them. The spiritual life, the call upon your life is just simply to fall in love. That's all the saints did. They had an encounter, something happened, and they just wanted to be with them. That's all you have to do. All you got to do is be with God. Forget everything else. Be with God. I am a 40-year-old father of three with a crap load of business stuff to do. I get up every day at 4. Now, this is abnormal. And I drive across town in Canberra, -8. I open the church, expose the Blessed Sacrament. I spend an hour there every morning from 4:30 to 5:30 before I ride and crash. Why? Because I can't stop going now. About a year and a half ago, I started to go and I just can't stop because I just want to be with him. I just want to be with him. People go, what happens when you go there? Not much, man. I just got to be there. I keep saying to Catholic teachers, just be with him. You can't do a supernatural task with human resources. Just be with him. A deputy principal in Perth said, Jonathan, I can't pray for more than 5 minutes, man. I said, really? If anybody, my 5% in the room, if any of you today, all I'm asking you is be with him, is just this. Ready? Basil Pennington, great master on prayer. How simple is this? Pray as you can, not as you can't. Pray as you can, not as you can't. I'm a contemplative. It's easy for me to sit there for an hour. Some of you might be Ignatian, Franciscan, Mazenod spirituality, whatever it is, to be with him, please think about finding it. Just be with him. You can't do a supernatural task with human resources. Maybe you didn't choose the job, maybe the vocation chose you. Vocation always leads to mission. Catholic schools are just a reflection of the faith formation of each person in them. So why not turn up to a place that's just full of people that really want to be there?
Well, hi there again, Jonathan Dore with you. I really hope that you got something, at least one good idea out of that presentation to over 100 educators. I'm sure there was at least one thing in there that's going to be really useful to you in your work in Catholic schools. So press on now to part two. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the big themes in Catholic education, and then going to talk a little bit more specifically about some of the key issues facing young men in Catholic schools. So if you want to find out more about what we're doing, check out the website, especially the Going Deeper online program, being used in hundreds of Catholic schools around the world. A great chance for staff to really deepen in their formation each week. I'm Jonathan Doyle. Look forward to talking to you again very soon.